Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the Cuarta Líneas podcast. I'm your host, Zach Lowy, and I'm here today with an incredibly special guest and a massive inspiration and role model to me, the man who created the Portugal website, which is really the mecca of English language of Portuguese football content. If there's no Portugal, there's no Cuarta Líneas. I cannot overestimate just how much of an influence he's been. And we've got him here today to discuss what has been a pretty crazy week in Portuguese football. Tom Cundert, how are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I'm great, Zach. Wow, that's quite an intro. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Very pleased to be speaking to you. So, like you say, a momentous week.
A momentous week indeed, right? Since our last episode with another Tom, Tomás da Cunha, we've seen a lot of action in Portuguese football. Famalicão beating Santa Clara on Friday, massive win that will certainly see them stay up. Boavista drawing to Tondela, and goals between two breakout stars, Albert Ellis and Mario González, to see them split the points. Passos de Ferreira and Gil Vicente drawing as well, a 1-1. Moreirense taking a 2-1 victory over Portimonense as well, the late goal from Gonçalo Franco. Porto on Monday just pretty much destroying Farense following Bilal Oaxeria's red card. And on Tuesday, we saw quite a lot of action. Belenense defeating Tondela, Santa Clara beating Kiev to stay in the fight for the final European Conference League spot and worsening Kiev's chances of staying up. Benfica also beating Nacional and confirming Nacional's relegation to the second division. So first team and only team so far to be relegated, Nacional. I think that's it. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm missing anything, Tom.
Yep, I think you're right. You know, the very, very busy few days.
Yeah, I think I may have forgotten one little detail. Sporting beating Boavista at the Estadio José Alvalade. Just, you know, a routine win for Sporting, you know, just the 17 shots and 62% possession. And, you know, don't think it really confirmed anything. Except for, drumroll, the Leões' first title in 19 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Today,
yeah.
I am speaking to two guests. I'm speaking to Tom Cundert, the incredible Portuguese football journalist, and Tom Cundert, the Sporting fan. I don't think many people who follow you know that you're a Sporting fan just because you're so unbiased and so balanced in your coverage. But this is a pretty crazy day for you. Let's just talk about the past 24 hours. Run me through what this has been like for you past 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely amazing, yeah. So I think I'll probably speak on this podcast a little bit more as a Sporting fan rather than a journalist, because it really just is an amazing feeling for Sporting fans. 19 years, that's a long time, isn't it, Zach? 19 years is the last time that Sporting got to celebrate being champions of Portugal. And, you know, it's been a pretty rough time in most of those years as well. They haven't really been that close that often. And of course, what makes this all the more remarkable is they just really, the club seem to be in free fall the last two or three seasons, you know, ever since the tumultuous end of the Bruno de Carvalho reign and the attack at Alcochete. And then last season was an absolute car crash of a season. Went through four coaches, you know, just about every player that was bought in the previous summer turned into a flop, ended up fourth, 22 points behind the winners, Porto. So that kind of just shows you that absolutely nobody saw this coming. Nobody, not even the most optimistic Sporting fan, I don't think, would have dreamed of, you know, winning the title, being unbeaten after 32 games, and winning the title with two games to spare. It's just absolutely incredible. So, you know, a lot of nerves about still yesterday, although, you know, Sporting only needed 2 points from the last three games. But just because of really that backdrop and such a long wait for this championship title, there were a few nerves. But, you know, Sporting really, ever since the Braga game, I think that was the key game, they've really started playing well again. They haven't scored that many goals, but they've really dominated every match since then. And yesterday was an absolute domination. They played really well. They should have really have won that, you know, the game very comfortably by 3, 4, 5 goals. They created chance after chance. But, yeah, you know, they don't, Sporting fans don't really mind about that. And, yeah, it was it was some party last night. I can tell you I'm a little bit sleep deprived. So you might have to excuse some of my wayward answers maybe today. But yeah, amazing night in Lisbon, and amazing night for all Sporting fans, I'm sure, you know, all over Portugal and all over the world. You know, it's been a long wait.
What was it like just being inside the stadium and watching your team end this nearly 2-decade title drought?
Oh, incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, I do sometimes have to pinch myself, and I do realize that I am, you know, very lucky to be in this position, especially with the pandemic. And, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that Sporting, after such a long wait, you know, their fans have gone through so much, and finally they're champions, and the fans couldn't really get to see it. But yeah, outside the state, I mean, yesterday was amazing because, you know, huge crowds had congregated before the game, as they have done in the last few games, you know, to kind of, you know, show the team their support. And, you know, the party really started well before the match yesterday. And then all throughout the match, you know, you could hear the noise, you could hear the crowd chanting on the outside of the stadium, and you could hear firecrackers going off, you could hear fireworks going off. And then when the final whistle finally went and Sporting won, you know, just kind of the whole city, or the whole, I suppose, green half of the city of Lisbon just kind of exploded. And all around the stadium, you know, I think people kind of forgot that there was a pandemic on, and pandemic or no pandemic, it was time to celebrate. And so being in the stadium, it was really quite an amazing atmosphere, even though you're in a stadium which was pretty much empty, just from a, I don't know, 50 or so journalists in there. And then, you know, obviously the two team delegations. But there was a hell of a lot of noise, because all around the stadium, you know, huge crowds chanting. Then the cars came out at the end. You could just hear car horns going, fireworks going off, firecrackers going off, the fans chanting, you know, Campi Orange, and all the other chants, and the players just going absolutely wild as well on the pitch. I always think it's quite strange, you know, players, because you kind of think they do that for the fans, don't they, and to share it with the fans. But you could see how much it meant to the players, because they were just, you know, absolutely dancing for joy and really emotional. You could tell on the pitch. You got to remember, almost none of those players, I think, I don't know, maybe none, or maybe just one or two, maybe Antonio Adan at Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid, kind of playing a secondary role. But none of those players had experience being national champions before.
I want to correct you there. So Adan, I believe he got a trophy when playing as Casillas' backup.
Okay.
But you're missing out on one player who played a big part.
Ah, Coates, of course, Sebastian Coates.
No, not Coates. Coates, I believe this is Coates' first league title.
Okay.
You're missing, I'm pretty darn
sure. Who is it then? Let me think.
It's not the usual suspect.
Oh, who can that be?
Been on a decent amount of time, but...
Antunes never won it, did he? João Pereira, did he ever? João Pereira, yeah.
João Pereira is... So, good old João Pereira, good old player who's 1 year older, a little more than older than his coach. João Pereira, I believe, is the only Sporting player who's actually played a leading role in a team's, I believe it was Benfica 2005.
Right. Yeah. Good shout. Yeah.
João Pereira. And then there was, you know, there's Antonio Adan, who won it as a backup. So really, I believe the only player in the Sporting team who had you know, won a league title when, like, before this season, when playing as, you know, a key player was João Pereira in that team. I don't think that any other player, maybe a player like Bruno Tabata won it in Brazil's, you know, regional leagues, but I'm pretty sure that João Pereira, I'm pretty confident that, you know, maybe Gonzalo Plata in Ecuador, but I'm pretty sure that João Pereira is the only player alongside Adan who has won it so far. So it really just tells you, you know, all you need to know. I mean, of course, João Mario is a European champion, but, you know, this team was really lacking winners. I mean, of course, there was Ruben Amorim, who had won decent amount while playing more a backup role, you know, at Benfica. But, you know, apart from that trophy, apart from the Taça at Braga last season, hadn't won anything in his coaching career either. So I really can't stress this enough. Nobody saw this coming, okay? Absolutely nobody saw this coming. Because frankly, you know, just looking back over the past few years, right? Okay, so of course, yeah, Sporting, you know, they had a promising season under Jorge Jesus, I think, 5 years ago, where they nearly won the title, came close, but lost out to Rui Vitória's Benfica, you know, had a decent transfer window, bringing in players such as Bruno Fernandes, Marcos Acuña, Wendell. But really the past few years, I think I've seen Sporting obviously losing players from the exodus, shall we say, you know, Gelson Martins, William Carvalho, Rui Patricio, so on, from the, you know, of course, from the training ground invasion and kind of the exodus that followed, and really not being able to replace, not being able to keep pace, shall we say, with Porto and Benfica. Just going back to the summer of 2018, you know, apart from Rafinha, who only stayed for one season before going to Rennes, really not many great signings. You know, Abdoulaye Diaby, Bruno Gaspar, Idrissa Doumbia, you know, some players that just kind of bring disgust to your face, I bet, Tom. Looking back to, you know, the next one, you know, losing Bastos, Bruno Fernandes, Rafinha, and bringing in some other players who were, you know, have been pretty mediocre. Luciano Vietto, Andras Porar, Valentin Rogier, Rafael Camacho from Liverpool. Okay, and now going back to last summer, obviously it's completely different now, the reaction, but back during last summer, you know, you saw Benfica spending a ton of money and bringing in a lot of exciting players such as Darwin Nunes and Luka Waldschmidt, Porto as well reinforcing their team, right, with, you know, Meri Taremi, Tony Martinez, so a lot of excitement for those teams. On the other hand, Sporting, not so much, you know, losing Wendell and Marcos Acuña, and of course Mateus Pereira to West Brom after his impressive loan, and bringing in Pedro Gonçalves, who was a rising star at Famalicão, right? Wasn't anywhere near compared to what he's been this season, but, you know, some excitement. Bringing in Nuno Santos from Rio Ave as part of that swap deal with Gelson Dalla and Francisco Geralds going the other way to Rio Ave. Zuhair Fedal coming in from Real Betis. But for the most part, some really petty pinching moves. You know, Sporting were definitely hit by the pandemic, and, you know, a lot of these were free transfers, such as Mateus Reis, Antonio Dan, Vitorino Antunes. I remember the Antunes deal caused so much ire in the Sporting community. You remember that, Tom? Just people, yeah, like, why are they bringing in this guy who's barely played in the past 2 years, you know? Bringing in Bruno Tabata for next to nothing from Portimonense, and of course getting Pedro Porro and João Mario on loan. So in general, literally no Sporting fan saw this coming. Looking at the first few months before the end of 2019-20 season, I don't know. I think that a lot of Sporting fans saw the value in Ruben Amorim in trying to change things up with a new system and playing a lot of youngsters such as Eduardo Quaresma and Jovan Cabral and so on. But I also think that most of them, or a decent amount, were like, why did we pay 10 million euros for this guy who has barely coached at the professional level? And now it just tells you how much football can change, right? Talk to me about what's been your process as a Sporting fan with Ruben Amorim.
Yeah, well, that was a really good roundup there, Zach, because you just said it because like expectations were just non-existent. It seemed like any quality, any player at Sporting who showed quality in the last few years got sold almost as soon as they had the chance. You know, you just mentioned there, Bas Dost, you know, Rafinha, Bruno Fernandes, and then even last summer we had
Acuna and Wendell.
Yeah, Acuna and Wendell, of course. Yeah, it's my lack of sleep's catching up with me. So and so it just seemed like, you know, as soon as it seemed like Sporting were really starting from rock bottom, and I think when Amorim came on and came to Sporting, of course, we have to remember, as well as that huge fee, which immediately lots of Sporting fans and lots of people in general really here in Portugal thought that was a huge gamble at best, and really just a bit of folly at worst, and a bit of, you know, just kind of a waste of money. You know, it made him the third highest coach transfer, I think, in football history or something. So people were just thinking, you know, what is the president, you know, what was he thinking of spending all this money? But I suppose the most optimistic people said, okay, you know, this is really starting from scratch. Maybe Sporting are going to slowly but surely try and build and try and go a little bit more back to their academy, which of course is the kind of the pride and joy of the club, even through all these years of such a drought in terms of titles. They have produced fantastic players, and it really is something which Sporting fans are proud of. And so they thought, okay, maybe, you know, this is really the start of something, but this is going to take a long time. If you base your whole kind of philosophy on how you're going to build up the club on young players, that's obviously going to take time before it bears fruit. And so it was, again, just another reason why this was such a huge surprise. And all those players you mentioned who were brought in, you know, Fedel, Nuno Santos, and Adan, you know, they're not players who really, you know, get the pulse racing, are they? They're not really players who get fans excited. Even the record players from loan, you know, João Palhinha and João Mário, you know, these were good players. These were popular players as well. So Sporting fans were happy to see them back. But, you know, Palhinha especially, he's just been an absolute revelation. And like I said before, all in complete contrast to last season, where almost every signing was a complete disaster, or, you know, the majority of them. This season, almost every signing made in the summer transfer window has actually come up trumps. You know, everyone, you could say, everyone's played their part. You know, Adan has been superb as a goalkeeper. You know, Fedal, I'd never even heard of him, to be honest. I know you must have, Zach, because there's not a player in the world you haven't heard of. But I hadn't even heard of him, but he's been excellent. You know, he's really won over the Sporting fans. It's been superb all season. And then you had even the old veterans, you know, Luis Neto. He played a lot, especially at the start of the season. He's done well. And even the old man you mentioned a while ago, you know, João Pereira. He's only had to come in once or twice, but for instance, yesterday, he had to come on when Porro got injured. And, you know, he looks great. It's amazing to think he's 37 years old. He didn't put a foot wrong. So,
João Encontrao, what a throwback.
Right,
seeing them going up against each other.
Yeah. So this is just really, it's all come together. It's just gelled beautifully, this team. And of course, now, rather than thinking, you know, this is Sporting, they're going to have to really claw themselves back. It's going to take years to get back up to Benfica and Sporting, you know, to be competitive with them. Suddenly we're there already. Sporting seem to be at that level. And excitingly, you know, a lot of the players are young players who, you know, in principle, I'm always a bit wary of people kind of thinking, you know, if they're that good at this age, you know, think how good they're going to become, because it doesn't always work that way. You know, sometimes players don't progress exactly how you expect them to. But the likes of Nuno Mendes and Gonçalo Inácio and Bragança and Cabral and Thiago Tomás and Gonçalves and Pedro Porro, you know, it's so many young players there who are really got so much upside. And I suppose the biggest problem for Sporting, first of all, is going to see if they can hold on to all of these players this summer. But, you know, if they do, or if they maybe just lose one, you know, that it bodes well for perhaps this not being a flash in the pan, and perhaps, you know, Sporting under Amorim can really become competitive on a, you know, a more regular basis.
Absolutely. That's what I want to talk about now. I mean, they're going to get a decent amount of money, you know, from winning the league, from getting into the Champions League, right, for the first time, I believe, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
That's definitely bodes well. But with the pandemic, you can't help but think one player is going to leave. Personally, what I think will happen with Sporting, I think they sell Nuno Mendes for a ton of money. His value is skyrocketing, and you know, maybe it would make sense for him to stay another season prior to the World Cup. But I think what happens is they sell Mendes for a ton of money. I think they bring in Pedro Porro on a permanent deal. I believe they have an option to buy on him, I think in around the region of 8.5 million euros. But anyways, I think they bring in Porro and João Mário on permanent deals, seal those up, make sure they're staying that with them for the season to come, and keeping hold of, you know, other guys like Pedro Gonçalves and João Palhinha. We'll see what happens, obviously, and you know, there are some offers that are too good to resist if you're Sporting. But personally, I think what happens is they keep hold of all of their starters apart from Nuno Mendes, and I think that they also get Pedro Porro and João Mário on permanent deals. So I want to get your take on that, but just before I finish up, I do think, you know, Sporting have had so many great players over the years, so many players that, you know, attract the attention of pretty much every single European giant. But honestly, if there's any person that Sporting need to keep a hold of, it's Ruben Amorim. Honestly, I mean, you know, Nuno Mendes or João Palhinha obviously would be massive losses, but neither would be as big of a loss as Ruben Amorim, because what he has done at the Estadio José Avalad is nothing short of a miracle. It's just absolutely incredible what he's done. So, you know, Sporting, they aren't on the same level financially as a Bayern, as a Barcelona, as a Juventus. So they're going to continue to lose these players. But guess what? As long as they have Ruben Amorim in charge, I think that they're going to continue to show why they are on, you know, the forefront in Portuguese football. And things are looking a bit uncertain with Sergio Conceição at Porto, still hasn't renewed his contract. Jorge Jesus, a lot of questions from his first season. I think he stays, you know, this summer, but results don't pick up. I don't know if he remains. On the other hand, I think that there's a lot of trust in Amorim. And I think that, you know, even if they do fall off next season, I think that this season has definitely bided him a lot of time, and I think it should definitely give Sporting incentive to have a project. I mean, we've seen just how much success something that with consistency, a long-term project, shall we say, can provide for a club like Benfica, like Porto, you know, with Conceição and Rui Vitória and Jorge Jesus in recent years. And I just think that Sporting need to emulate that.
I agree.
It happens with Sporting.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting yesterday. Amorim was asked, you know, straightforwardly, you know, if he was thinking of leaving Sporting, you know, if he got a big offer, would he leave? And he said, you know, straight away, no, I'm staying here. I'm very happy here. And I think he's also realistic. You know, even yesterday, this was in the press conference at the end of the game where they just won the league. You know, everyone was in euphoria. He still managed to, you know, exude this kind of calm, which has kind of personified characterized his whole demeanor this season, you know, despite getting closer and closer to this incredible achievement and then pulling it off. He's always remained really calm, and I think that's been really important for the players and for the squads as well. And he said, I know how football works. I'm kind of, you know, being receiving a lot of praise at the moment, but at the start of next season, you know, if things go badly awry in the Champions League, if things go, you know, if I start losing matches in the league, then, you know, lots of people will be calling for my head. He knows that he's just at the start of his trajectory and has a lot of work still to do at Sporting. I absolutely agree with you. You know, I find it interesting sometimes. I mean, that transfer fee for Ruben Amorim, 10 million, which took everyone by surprise and drew lots of criticism. And, you know, even I was surprised at that. But I've often said this. I remember speaking to Sean Gillan. We had this exchange of conversation quite often. And so can't really understand in some ways why coaches aren't transferred for these sort of prices and players are. Because if you think about it, the coach, a successful coach, he increases the value of all the players. You know, these players, Nuno Mendes, How much was he worth this time last year? No, I don't know. Sporting would have been probably amazed if anyone offered, you know, 5-10 million for him. How much is he worth now? Probably five times that. You know, and you can just go on and on with all these players, you know, Gonzalo Inacio, another one, you know, virtually a first teamer in a championship winning team now. You know, Cabral just looks brilliant. Jovan, whenever he comes on, you know, even Thiago Tomás, who's got his limitations, but, you know, this is a 18-year-old kid who you know, played his part. All of these players, and, you know, not to mention Pedro Gonçalves and Pedro Porro, who have been absolutely fantastic. All of these players, their value must have increased. I know this is your area more, Zach, but I don't know, must have increased, what, 3, 4, 5 told, maybe, just in one season? And that's down to Ruben Amorim. When he did sign his new improved contract, it was exactly 1 year after he signed his initial contract. I think it was in March, February, March time. And it was actually the buyout clause of Ruben Amorim himself was put at 30 million euros. So, you know, that's straight away a little bit of a, I suppose you can say, a little bit of security for Sporting, maybe a bit further down the line, because I really honestly don't think Amorim is, you know, is interested in moving, you know, at the moment. So, yeah, you know, this is definitely, without a doubt, I think for Sporting to build on this, they really need to continue what has been one of the keys of this season, and that's just to be stable, you know, to be a stable club in terms of their boardroom, in terms of their president, in terms of their coach, in terms of the playing staff. I agree also with your assessment of possible incomings and outgoings this season. I think Nuno Mendes has been mentioned a lot just because he really is a shining star and very obviously a player who is good enough, I think, to play in just about any team in the world. And of course, with the Euros coming up, it'll be interesting to see if he gets much playing time in that, because that will even further increase his value if he hasn't been sold in the meantime. So he could be the one which is sold, because again, this is the model which Sporting are going to have to, probably all Portuguese clubs, but Sporting are going to have to kind of used to try and build themselves up again and make themselves competitive, hopefully, in Europe as well as at home, is, you know, every year that they can't compete with the biggest clubs in terms of wages, and they can't turn down these massive transfer fees. So probably every year they will sell one, maybe one, two. But that's okay, one or two players. That's not too bad, because, again, if Sporting are going to base their whole club on their youth academy, then you actually need players. You know, you need a bit of a throughput, don't you? Because if you just keep the same team, then that's going to block the younger players coming through. So they need to do that. Just, you know, maybe bring up one or two of their best players, get a huge transfer fee, hopefully, every season or every other season for, you know, one or two players. Create spaces for the new youth players to come in. I think that's certainly the plan for the next few seasons.
Yeah, so they did pay 10 million initially for him, making him the third most expensive manager of all time, behind André Villas-Boas and Brendan Rodgers. But certain, you know, fees, VAT and taxes and whatnot, and other fines, saw that figure rise to 14.4 million euros, making him the second most expensive manager after Villas-Boas. Obviously, that has since been dwarfed by Bayern's capture of Julian Nagelsmann last month. But obviously, this is money well spent, I think, from a Sporting perspective. And apart from being a great coach and being a coach that, you know, trusts in his youth, I also think that Amorim's just a great person. You know, you can clearly see how much more humble he is than a Conceição or a Jorge Jesus. I mean, there's really no competition. I mean, you see so many coaches like those two complaining about referee decisions or, you know, taking unnecessary shots. Amorim, on the other hand, definitely more modern. You know, obviously he's a bit younger than those two, and he's always a coach who is going to, you know, deflect credit and take accountability at the same time. We saw that a few months ago when Paulo Futre, you know, said Sporting are pretty much going to win the title, and Amorim denied it. And he said, if we had a Paulo Futre in our team, then yeah, we would be. But, you know, I think that in general, apart from being, you know, a great coach, he's also just a really well-spoken guy, and who I think that Jorge Jesus and Sergio Conceição could learn a lot from. So, you know,
sorry just to interrupt you, but you're right, because I think that's one of his secrets, definitely, is he likes to share the plaudits. You know, he's not one of these coaches who kind of, you know, wants the spotlight on him. And, you know, in contrast to certain other coaches, I think, hello, Jorge Jesus. But an example of this even was yesterday, you know, in that same press conference I was talking about, when he went into the press room. It was different from the normal press conference because he insisted that his whole coaching staff were with him. And so you had eight or nine chairs, row all the way across the, you know, the desk and flanking the two sides. So you had Ruben Amorim in the middle, and he had, all his coaching staff, three or four on one side, three or four on the other side. And he said, you know, this is important for me to do this because it's a kind of, you know, visible demonstration of the fact that this isn't, you know, one person's work. This is the work of a whole team, a whole coaching team. And so, you know, they deserve as much praise as I do. So yeah, you're right. Of course, the only thing I'd say on the other side is we have to remember it is easy, or it's easier. It's much easier to be kind of magnanimous and humble and, you know, polite and say all the right things when you're winning. Not quite so easy when you're losing. So, but yeah, you know, let's see. So far, without a doubt, he hasn't put a foot wrong at all. And I think his communication skills in general have been, absolutely brilliant, spot on from start to finish.
It also feels like this has not been an easy route for Amorim. After retiring, he took a post-grad course in psychology, then started working as a manager with third division Casa Pia. The team was deducted 6 points, and Amorim was suspended after giving instructions during match without having the required coaching level do so. And, you know, even though that ban was suspended, he resigned shortly after. Amorim then deciding to go to Benfica as the U23 coach, and then rejecting that after a meeting, then going to Braga, and, you know, then going to Sporting, and the rest is history. But it does seem like there's been, I don't know if I should say a witch hunt, but he has been under a lot of scrutiny from the Portuguese football governing body because of that lack of experience. And, you know, he's gotten suspended and had to miss a few games because of this. It was funny, yesterday we saw the Sporting players invade his press conference and say, Amorim castigado por ser campeão, Amorim punished for being a champion. Can you just run down a little bit about that, you know, Amorim's, how should we say this, running from the law, his run-ins with the Portuguese football governing body's scrutiny? Do you think it's been fair? What do you think of it?
Well, I'm not too sure. I don't really buy very much this theory that it's a witch hunt or they're particularly after him. I just think the Portuguese football authorities, the disciplinary committees, and the whole system is just completely broken. It's just ridiculous. You know, lots of the decisions. I think one of the worst things we see this happen time and again is some player or some coach does something wrong, or, you know, says something out of line. So they are disciplined. Okay, fair enough. And then what happens, Zach? It all goes through, it gets delayed. It all goes through, I don't know how many committees, how many appeals. And the actual punishment gets handed down sometimes 7, 8 months in advance, you know, almost a year in advance. And of course, if that happens to fall just a week before a Clásico, or the week before an important game, then that just triggers all these conspiracy theories of, this has been done on purpose. This is another example of why the disciplinary committee is favouring Sporting or favouring Benfica or favouring Porto. You know, it really is a big problem in Portugal, the whole system of disciplining players or enforcing punishments is a bit of a joke, really, and that needs to be overhauled. As they say here, if it's not really, you know, a disciplinary system which works properly and swiftly, it's not really a disciplinary system at all. And it, you know, the players aren't even incentivize the players or the coaches, you know, to behave properly, because there's also kind of ways that they can get around these suspensions. So, yeah, I wouldn't actually say that particularly. I, for one, don't. I know certain Sporting fans do think this, that he has been, that Sporting are being targeted, but I, for one, don't believe that. I just think it's a question of incompetence, really. Unfortunately, it's incredible. Portuguese football has got so many incredible players, incredible talents, incredible coaches. When you look at the size of the country and the population, they just completely, punch above their weight, and just one of the most amazing football talent production countries in the whole world per capita. You could argue, it must be very near the top. And yet it's football authorities, and especially when it comes down to the administration of the domestic game, is really just, I think, still very amateurish, or, has a lot of problems, which just makes you think in one way how much better football in Portugal could be if they sorted it out properly.
Absolutely. I think that's so spot on. You really hit the nail on the head. Portuguese football's governing authorities really so broken, really needs a massive overhaul. Just the other day, we saw Vitória de Guimarães finally getting punished for the racist abuse that Musa Marega suffered in last season. Vitória having to go with 3 home games to be played behind closed doors, which is pretty ridiculous given the fact that, fans aren't even in the stadium. I know that I saw something that, right, I think fans are going to be available. There's 10% capacity now for the final 2 games, which, I'm not sure if that really makes sense given the fact there's still a lot to play for. Personally, I think that they should just wait until next season for that to happen. But in general, Portuguese football's authorities really just so... They definitely harm the quality of the league, I think. And, good for Amorim. Good for Amorim for dealing with it and showing them where they can put their punishment, shall we say. One player who we've touched up a little bit and who has gone through some, been pretty great, had a decline in form around April, March, but has really been superb in Sporting's last few games, and that is João Palhinha. Palhinha had spent the past 2 seasons on loan at Braga, looked like he was going to leave with, Wolves and I think Spartak Moscow interested in him, but ended up staying, and what a great decision that's been. Sometimes not selling a player is as good of a signing as actually buying a player, and we've seen that with Palhinha.
Absolutely, yeah. Did you see the match yesterday, Zach?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
You say, oh, he was absolutely brilliant. I think that's possibly one of his best games of the season. We know him as this kind of superb destroyer, so much energy in the middle of the field. But yesterday, the thing which really struck me, he was just spraying those cross-field passes, beautiful passes, 40, 50 yards, flank to flank, spot on almost all of them, Really, really impressed me. That side of his game, I think, has really come on. And you're absolutely right. Brilliant. He's had an absolutely brilliant season. And you're right as well that, why go out and spend a lot of money on a player which is, let's face it, it's always a little bit of a risk. It's always a little bit of a punt spending a lot of money on a player, especially if it's a player coming from, outside the context either of Sporting, so from a smaller Portuguese club, or even more of a risk from abroad. You don't know how they're going to adapt. It doesn't matter how much talent they have. If they're not comfortable, then it might not work out. But Palhinha, he's from the Sporting Academy. He knows the club inside out. He never really expressed any desire to leave. Well, of course, he only left on loan to Braga. But even at the time, I remember lots of Sporting fans weren't very happy about that because they could see he had potential. But that said, I actually think it's probably been good for Palhinha because I think he's improved year on year at Braga and he's played a lot more there than perhaps he would have at Sporting. And this season, he's just taking his game to another level, yeah. One of the players of the season, without doubt. And yeah, yesterday I just thought he was absolutely amazing. I think possibly him and Nuno Santos were the best players on the pitch yesterday.
Does he start for Portugal for you?
Well, that's a good question. If you'd asked me that any time, probably in this last year, this last season, with lots of Sporting fans calling for him, I'm a huge fan of William. I know he's had his struggles this season, but I think he's the sort of player that, perhaps doesn't need to be 100% fitness-wise. I just think he makes Portugal click so much. But I was a little bit loath to see William removed from the Portugal team to kind of make space for Pelini. I'm also a big fan of Danilo. But you have to say, I think playing like that, yeah. And also, when he did play for Portugal in the recent international breaks, he certainly didn't knock out a place at all. In the recent international games, I know Portugal didn't play great opposition apart from the Serbia game, but yeah, I think he's definitely in with a shout. And I think given what's happened to William, unfortunately playing very little football at Betis, and even Danilo, is not an automatic starter, is he, for PSG? No shame there, they've got an amazing squad. But perhaps, if you go on form and if you go on, the amount of football played and the amount of quality shown this season, then yeah, you have to say, I think it's a very good shout to be a starter for Portugal in the Euros.
I think Danilo starts, but I would personally, if I was Fernando Santos, I'd start Paulinho, just because, Danilo has not been great. I think even there's an argument made that his better performances at PSG have been at center back, which I think bodes well for Portugal, because I think that, if Pepe does get injured again, I think that Danilo could potentially slot in. Santos might want him over, a José Font or a Domingos Duarte, potentially. We'll see. But I think that Paulinho, personally, I think he deserves to start. Just been so massive for Sporting. I want to touch up a little bit on a player you mentioned, Nuno Santos. So a lot of criticism. He hasn't been the most technically gifted players, but he has been important. And I think one of the more underrated stars in this Sporting team. Talk to me about Nuno Santos. Do you think that Sporting made the right decision to swap Francisco Geralds and Gelson Dalla, as well as some cash for Nuno Santos?
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding, and it's absolutely been proven to be an excellent deal, because those two players have really struggled, as everyone at Rio Ave have, haven't they? They don't really know what's happened at that club. It's just gone all pear-shaped. But they're good players. Pelinha and Dalla and Geraldes are good players. But yeah, Nuno Santos has been a star. It's been a star, you have to say. And I think it was no coincidence that spell where Sporting were just beginning to, waver a little bit, where they had three draws in four games, and even the games before then, they'd won, but they'd won really, they'd really struggled to create chances, and really they looked much less dynamic than they had them before or after. That coincided with a time when Nuno Santos wasn't in the team. Ruben Amorim, for whatever reason, he put him on the bench he spent most of the, maybe about a month or a month and a half, 2 months even, playing pretty little football, to be honest. Sometimes he didn't really enter, or sometimes he just came on as a late sub. But, before that, first half of the season, he was excellent. Really was a, very dynamic performer. And since he's come back into the team, he came back into the team 3 or 4 games ago. And, he's been superb. And yesterday, again, like I said, I think man of the match, I'd give it to either Pelinha or Nuno Santos. That left flank as well, especially the way he combines with Nuno Mendes. It's a real shame it will be if Mendes leaves, because that's beautiful combinations. Yesterday they were just, it was almost, it seemed like they'd had some kind of telepathy going, telepathic understanding between them, because they were combining, really well. Both superb, left foot, very dynamic players. And Santos yesterday, he's just on his own. He set up about 3 or 4 perfect chances, for Paulinho, only managed to stick one in the back of the net, but the all-important goal. No doubt about it. Of course, from Sporting's point of view, again, he's an ex-Benfica product, of course, so that makes it a little bit sweeter. Sporting are used to producing fantastic players who then go on to do great things for their rivals, players like Joao Moutinho, for example. And, you know, it's quite often that Sporting don't get the best out of their academy products. And then to kind of rub salt in the wounds, they go to Porto and Benfica and do really well there. Simão Sabrosa, of course, was a Benfica legend, and he was from the Sporting Academy.
Ruben Amorim.
Yeah, yeah, another one, exactly. So yeah, it's good for Sporting to kind of have the boot on the other foot, and so they're really taking advantage of Santos. I remember when he was a young player. I always remember him at World Youth Cup, I think the World Under 20 Youth Cup in New Zealand. Can't remember what year it was exactly, but I suppose that must have been about 6 years ago, maybe. And I remember him looking really good there and thinking, yeah, wow, this is a player to keep an eye on. But didn't really make too much progress. I think he was badly hit by injuries as well. But yeah, last season, especially at Rio Ave, you know, he was good. He was really good. But he's another player who I'd say is taking his game to another level this season. And yeah, you know, good mention, Zach, you know, flagging him up, because he has been an important component in this Sporting triumph, without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. There was, at halftime, there was a comparison between Nuno Santos and Nuno Santos. Nuno Santos, of course, on Sporting, you know, an ex-Benfica player, and also Nuno Santos currently on loan from Benfica at Boavista. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, he almost scored as well, didn't he? That Nuno Santos, I think he's a Boavista captain, isn't he? Almost scored just their one chance really all game, and forced a really good save out of Adan in the first half.
Definitely. But yeah, Nuno Santos, I think, obviously, as you say, you know, the proof is in the pastel ginata. Nuno has been great. I would have liked to see Gelson Dalla get more chances as well as Gerald's, who, by the way, just published a book of poetry. Gerald's. But overall, you know, Sporting did get the better end of that deal. And I loved how during the crazy celebrations over the past 24 hours, they got a picture, actually, of Nuno Santos holding up a banner saying, "Gracias a Dios, no soy Lampio." Or in other words, thank God that I am not a Benfiquista. So, you know, obviously, his blood alcohol content was probably a bit elevated at this point. You know, even if it wasn't, you know, he's just having fun. So, you know, that's just what it is. You know, kind of charges to the game and move on, you know.
Another thing about Santos, actually, I'd say, apart from his, you know, his, like you said, his, perhaps technically, I don't actually think he's bad technically. He's very, very one-footed. He is, he's basically, his right foot is for standing on. You know, he uses his left foot the whole time. But I think one of his chief attributes, I would say, is his tenacity. And he's a really, really feisty player. You know, he's really, even his whole attitude. I think I won't repeat it on here because I know you understand that. The other day when they were playing, I think it was the game against Braga, when Sporting had a throw, you know, the Nuno Santos immediately wanted to take a quick throw, and the ball boy just delayed a little bit, just marginally, throwing him the ball. Right. And Nuno Santos just went absolutely ballistic at it, gave him a mouthful, you know, not the most pleasant kind of way to tell him just to wake up and give him the ball. But it just shows you, he kind of goes into a different zone when he's on the pitch, and, you know, he's really kind of wholehearted and, you know, wholehearted player, feisty player. And yeah, that's also another big aspect of his game.
And just want to mention, Nuno Santos is actually one of three players in the Sporting squad that had previously won a league title. I believe he had played a game or two for Benfica's
Good shout.
Season for the 2015-16 season. So, yeah, he, as well as Adan and João Pereira, had won league titles. But, yeah, good to see him getting praise. Talk to me about Paulinho, though, because a lot of criticism for him since his move, but just scored two massive goals against Rio Ave and Boavista to deliver Sporting's title.
Yeah, I really like Paulinho. I really like him. Even when he was having his struggles at Sporting, and really he hasn't, I've got to be honest and say, he hasn't really played too well since he's been at Sporting, certainly not at the level that he has played at Braga the last few seasons, but I think he's a wonderful player, Paulinho, and I'm absolutely sure he's going to score a ton of goals for Sporting. And, you know, he's, I think, perhaps just the nerves got to him a little bit since his move to Sporting. And, of course, he got that injury just, I think, first or second game. And then he was out for, you know, a month or two. And so that obviously put a bit of pressure on him, more pressure. Of course, his Sporting's record signing, which is €16 million, which is, you know, it's very unusual for Sporting to spend that amount of money on one player. So that, you know, whatever he says and whatever Ruben Amorim says, you know, trying to take the pressure off, that definitely does, you know, put a bit of pressure on him without a doubt. And so, you know, we haven't seen the best of him this season. But even so, yeah, like you say, he's scored very important goals. I think he's only scored three since he's been at Sporting, but they've all been very important goals. And he's also got quite a few assists in that, you know, and Sporting have really struggled. They haven't struggled to create chances, but they've just struggled to finish them in the last few matches. But he's been at the heart of everything. And as well as being a good goal scorer, I wouldn't be surprised next season if he hits 20, 25 goals. He's a really good striker for this system. And Ruben Amorim really insisted on having him because his all-round game is just perfect, you know, for this system. Really good at combining with the other two attackers in a 3-4-3 or even with the wing-backs. You know, really good at just kind of dynamising that attack and also at preoccupying the opposition centre back sometimes on his own. So it's just a, you know, very important cog in this machine, I think. And he has earned quite a lot of criticism, even from Sporting fans, because of course he came into the side and Thiago Tomás was a player who usually went out of the side to accommodate him, and is obviously as a homegrown player very popular at Sporting. And it kind of coincided with Sporting's little wobble when Paulinho came into the side, and so some people were even blaming him or saying that he's kind of, you know, destroyed, you know, not purposely, but just kind of, you know, messed with the chemistry of the team. But you know, that was just very harsh. I think just the whole Sporting side just had that little dip in form. I think it was nothing to do with Paulinho himself. And yeah, he's a great player. It's going to be very interesting now that the Euro squads have been increased to 26. I think, of course, there's so much competition for places.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see if he might just sneak in there, because he has played for Portugal. You know, he made his debut, I think it was earlier this year, and he scored in his debut in that, it was the friendly against Andorra, if memory serves me right. I think he actually scored a couple of goals in that game. And, you know, he looked the part. At that time, he was flying, you know, he's full of confidence. You know, he's not on top of his game at the moment, so that might persuade Fernando Santos, you know, to not to pick him. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was a bit of a surprise inclusion, because he's a little bit different from the other Portugal centre forwards. I suppose if it's down to André Silva or Paulinho, you have to say that André Silva deserves it again going on this season. But if he wants two kind of, you know, more genuine number nines rather than, you know, Portugal's other forward positions who, you know, a bit more kind of you know, wide players, not the same kind of, you know, pure centre forward, you could say, like Paulinho, he might just sneak in there.
Yeah, just quick, make sure to check out our article that we just posted on BTL from Kane Smith on André Silva. Really digs into just how good he has been at Eintracht this season. I don't think that Paulinho will get into the squad, but he is a contender for it. Definitely don't count him out. I definitely think that he is going to be like a new signing for Sporting next season, just in terms of how much he's adapted.
Yeah, agree.
If he's fully fit. So definitely going to be massive for them and really going to help them to attempt to defend their title. Now that we've discussed a lot of Sporting, I want to get into our talent of the week section, where we discuss a player who is really impressing and in either in Portugal or outside of Portugal, but who's part of the Selecao setup. Tom, who is your talent of the week?
Well, I'll go for a little bit of a left field one, because he doesn't get mentioned so often. You've gone through so many, Zach. I don't think there's that many which are left. But one I'd mention is at Santa Clara, Lincoln, the Brazilian playmaker. And I've really been very impressed with him. He's got a lot of football under his belt for a young player. I think he's still 21 or 22. And he played a full season last season, a full season this season. And he's just someone who really impresses me whenever I watch him. You know, really kind of classy player, amazing left foot. He takes order, set pieces, and, you know, got a wonderful delivery, very good crosser of the ball. And one thing which really impresses me is his willingness to ask for the ball, you know, even in the big matches against, I remember seeing him here against Sporting when Santa Clara, to be perfectly honest, they were beaten by Sporting, but they were pretty unlucky, probably deserved at least a draw in that game. And it's kind of been the story of their season against the big sides. They played really well against Sporting, played really well against Benfica, played really well against Porto in the three away games, and they got beaten in all of them when they probably deserved at least a draw in all of them. But Lincoln, he really impresses me because he, you know, he calls the ball, he wants the ball even in tight spaces. He's a clever footballer, he's a quick thinker, and I think he, you know, he relies on his brain maybe more than his, you know, physical attributes. But definitely is one who's not really mentioned that much, especially, you know, Santa Clara. They've had a fantastic season, and they've had a, you know, a few players who perhaps catch the eye a little bit more than him. But is a player who I think could be destined for a step up, Lincoln.
Really glad you mentioned Lincoln. He's really impressed me with the Asturians under Daniel Ramos. Just a fantastic season for Santa Clara, who are still in the race for European football, despite losing top scorer Thiago Santana midway through the season to a Chinese club. Really a lot of impressive talents in this squad. You know, you've got center backs Mikel Villanueva and Fabio Cardoso. Hidemasa Morita, been very good since joining from Japan. And I think that Lincoln and Carlos Jr. as well could be destined for big moves this summer. Yeah, really glad you mentioned him. My talent of the week, though, I know I'm a bit hypocritical for this because I typically go for, I typically focus on younger players, but I can't ignore this form from a player who is about to be 35 in a few months, but been absolutely fantastic. And his name is Nani, an ex-Sportingista. Don't believe he was around for Sporting's last league title, but he's been around for quite a while, and he has been absolutely fantastic for Orlando City in the past few games, scoring some absolute golazos against New York City FC, FC Cincinnati, and Sporting Kansas City in his past three games. Honestly, if you haven't watched them, go to YouTube, go to the MLS, you know, page or whatever, and watch them, because every single goal is just a beauty and it's worth looking at. And it's just great to see him still so magical after all these years. I wanted to just finish up on this episode by asking you, do you think he could potentially make it into the Portugal squad? I know it's been a while since he made it into Fernando Santos' squad, but considering the fact that, you know, Pedro Neto is injured, I think that opens the door for Rafa and Gonçalo Guedes to get into the squad. But I just wonder, you know, having a player with the experience of Nani, who's done great for the Seleção, and who's still showing that he's got it after all these years in Florida. I don't know. It's an interesting one. What do you think?
Yeah. I think that's a legitimate question. Of course, we have to remember he was a key player, really, for Fernando Santos and Portugal at Euro 2016. You know, it's him and Ronaldo up front. And, you know, he scored three goals in the tournament, and he played every game, and he played really well in every game. I think he really had a bit of a swan song in terms of his international career, because he was a player who actually used to draw quite a lot of criticism as a Portugal player, because he can be quite frustrating to watch sometimes. He kind of slows up the game a little bit, but he was brilliant at Euro 2016. And I think one of the reasons for that, I always say, is Nani, when he hasn't got time to think, is superb. When he's more instinctive, I think is really good. And he was playing up front for Portugal in that tournament. And so he had less time to think. You know, he wasn't on the wings. He didn't receive the ball in deep positions. He, you know, a lot of his goals were kind of first-time touches. So, like you say, he's been absolutely brilliant, you know. And of course, as a as a sporting fan, I'm a huge fan of Nani. It was interesting. I saw a poll the other day. If you could choose three players, three sporting players who were never champions at sporting, and you could, you know, kind of transport them into this side to become champions, to experience the thrill of being a Portuguese championship winner, you know, which three would you have? And I think he was probably one of the most voted, Nani. You know, he had a whole wide range of players, but I think he was the one which appeared on so many fans, you know, so many fans voted for him because very popular player, of course, brilliant when he burst on the scene for Sporting, very good when he came back for that short spell quite recently, a couple of seasons ago. Again, you know, it's very good then. And, you know, he's one of these players, obviously, you can see it by the way he's playing, really looks after himself, you know, really does all the right things in terms of his diet, in terms of his, you know, kind of recuperation after games to extend his career and to perform the way he has been performing so far. They've been brilliant, haven't they, Zach? I have caught those goals that you mentioned before. So, yeah, who knows? I think possibly I'd say he's a bit like Paulinho. I think he's a little bit of an outside shot. Maybe if, touch wood, this doesn't happen, but maybe if there's, you know, one or two injuries in the forward positions, yeah, he could be a contender. But yeah, let's wait and see. I think if he did come into the squad, I don't think he'd let anyone down.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on. It's a pleasure as usual to talk to you, and I really hope that we can do this again in a month or two, because you're just a source, a fountain of knowledge, and it's really just fantastic to have you on. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm at Portugal1, which is on Twitter. That's the easiest way to find me, which is at Portugal1, the number one. So if you just go to Twitter, see me there, and then all, you know, anything I do, anything of my collaborators at Portugal, anything they write about Portuguese football, that would be flagged up there. So if you're into Portuguese football, go there.
Highly recommend it. Thank you once again. Parabéns to all of the Sporting fans out here, and I will see you all again next week.